evening, everybody. Welcome to the latest edition of Derek Gervin's As Good As It Gets Basketball Podcast. This is Ricky Hampton from the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com, along with my fellow columnist, Michael Robinson of the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com, and, of course, the star of the show, the one and only Mr. Derek Gervin. Mike and Derek, how are you gentlemen doing this evening?
Doing fine. I'm doing great. Ready to get it going tonight. I'm excited about the show tonight.
Yeah, man, we got a lot of stuff.
Oh, I concur. I feel the same way.
It's a lot of stuff to chop up here as I'm watching, and I'm sure you guys are, and watching number 23 of the Los Angeles Lakers, a new acquisition for them, as they kick off the exhibition season in Denver against the they're in Vegas, aren't they?
No, San Diego.
They're playing in San Diego?
Yeah.
Well, we got LeBron's rollout in L.A., and we're going to definitely take a look at the NBA season. Talk about a bunch of topics. One of the things I want to get into, guys, is kind of on the business side of sports, the injury to Earl Thomas of the Seattle Seahawks today. The all-pro safety who has been in a pretty volatile negotiation with the team about extending his contract was hurt today. Had to be carted off the field in an air cast with an air cast. He has a lower leg fracture. We don't know how serious it is, and hopefully it's not too serious. And, you know, he flipped the bird to the Seahawks sideline, and I can assure you guys he wasn't flipping off his teammates. He was flipping off the Seattle Seahawks front office and probably – every front office in the National Football League, because Derek, you're a former NBA player, you know how those negotiations can be and the business end of the games that we love to watch.
Well, it's sad to me, first of all. I want to send my condolences. I'm sorry for Earl. It's a big injury. It's a big loss. And it's sad because here's the situation. This is what it's about, getting your money. And this is a perfect example. This guy was part of the Legion of Boom. I mean, come on. Seattle, everybody knows about the Legion. You got Cam Chancellor, Richard Sherman. I mean, come on. You got all those guys back there. Earl Thomas was a big part of that. Everyone got their just due. Everyone was paid except for him. And then he comes out. I have to ask you guys, I was just wondering about it, Mike and Rick, do you think injury, him not playing full-time, him not going to camp, do you think that had anything to do with his injury? Because that bothers me that I'm wondering, was he in complete shape? Was he in full shape? And it's sad to me what happened to him, but I'm just thinking about it. It could have been avoided. And maybe he had practiced a little more.
You go ahead, Mike. You go first on this.
Okay, I kind of think that too, because, you know, and it seems like that's the scenario that usually happens. Somebody comes off of a holdout or something like that, and their body's not really ready for it, and their first converse situation, and they seem to get hurt. So, yeah, it seems to be that's the kind of Murphy's Law of what could go wrong, will go wrong when you come off of a holdout. And it's almost like, you know, then the upper brass could say, see, this is what we told you, should have been in camp, you know. But they also have to do the business side of it. So there's a catch-22, you know. Was he right to hold out to try to get the best numerical numbers for him and his family? Or, you know, should he have been in camp right away to avoid injury? So it's hard to say, but it does seem to be that's how it works out. That once you hold out, you tend to come back, you're susceptible to being injured.
And when you look at the play, it looks like he was trying to it looks like a freak thing. He was trying to avoid a guy in the end zone. He was trying to hop over him. and his leg just seemed to get stuck in the artificial turf or something, and it popped back. But you know, guys, and to our listening audience out there, just the background on this, he has been in really intense negotiation with the Seahawks. He set out all the training camp. He came in and said, "Hey, if I got a headache, I'm not practicing. If I got a hangnail, I'm not going out there unless I'm totally 100%. And Mike, you're so right. It just seems like when these guys do this, something kind of happens to them. And I'm going to go back and do some research because I can't give you any other example of that right now. But I know those examples are out there. But Derek, what other choice does he have?
I know his decision. I thought he made the right decision for himself. That's a decision that no one else could ever question, because they don't know what goes on. This man has a life. He has a family. He has to take care of, and he's earned it. I mean, it's not like he didn't go out there. He backed up his play. He backed up his talk. He's a brash young man, very cocky. He has, but it's in a good way. But he's backed it up. He's been a six-time All-Pro out of 8 years. Well, I'm sorry, not six-time All-Pro. He's been on the All-Pro team six times. So, I mean, out of 8 years. I mean, come on. You're looking at 75% there. I think he's earned more than earned his money. $8.5 million is now. He's worth more than that. And I'm just sorry. It bothers me. It really kind of brought me to tears when I found out about the injury, because it's just, wow. It's just a bad time. It's a bad timing. And anytime you get hurt, it's bad timing. But his situation was just so different.
And here's the thing that really gets me, Mike and Derek. When these guys do this, the NFL got this thing so set up, they end up becoming the bad guys. Look at Pittsburgh. Look at Le'Veon Bell. He is the bad guy for sitting out. He's letting the Steelers down. He's letting his teammates down. He's not honoring his commitment to Pittsburgh. Well, in actuality, he has no commitment to Pittsburgh. He has a contract out there waiting to be signed, and we can question whether he wants to lose all his money or not. But like Derek said, that's his choice. Because on the flip side, we know as soon as Le'Veon is not productive, what's going to happen? He's gone. And that's why I'm thinking – When Thomas knew this was the game they were playing, because he saw all his Legion of Boom teammates get shipped out. Sherman, Cam Chancellor got hurt. He's gone. He's the lone remaining guy from that defense.
Right.
And he knew he had to make his stand. And I know he's pissed because all that's gone down the drain now. His career in Seattle's over, and depending on the injury, his career in the National Football League is over. And his value is probably going to be way down now because of the injury, and he's an older player.
It's sad, Rick. Go ahead, Mike. Go ahead, Mike.
I was going to say, and you mentioned Sherman's nicked again this year. You know, he's out here in San Francisco, but you know, he's banged up again now. I don't think he played today. You know, they were down in L.A., and I don't think he played today. And it's like, you know, is that still remnants from last year? You know, same thing, you know, how you got to come back off an injury, especially with his Achilles. Maybe he'll be overcompensating, which makes you susceptible to other injuries. So there's a lot of factors that come to play when you're dealing with this, and we got to look at age. These guys are getting older, you know, stuff that you could get over at 22 is not going to happen at 32. So there's a lot of different factors that come into play. But the bottom line is, when you can make it through a career without any serious injury, you are very blessed and fortunate.
And you know who else you should be flipping off, guys? The NFL Players Association. Because made them – they have the weakest players association in all of professional sports. These guys do not have guaranteed contracts. We're finally seeing a few guys sign deals that have some guaranteed money. they have given the owners all kind of power and domain over them. You don't see these guys taking control of their careers the way we see with the NBA players or the players in Major League Baseball. And so he got every right to be pissed. But while you're flipping off the Seahawks, you need to take a look at the NFL Player Association. And I don't know why these guys are letting that happen. They are the product.
You have to bond together. You just have a couple guys that are speaking up for you. A lot of times these guys, when the situation arises, they don't all take a stand right then. And so you got three guys that are speaking up right now. Situation dies down. Then you got another three or four guys speaking up later, as opposed to all of them, you know, bonding together and speaking and being powerful as a unit. You know, there's power in numbers. It saddens me because even the Le'Veon Bell situation, they keep, and I had to get this in, and I want you and Mike to tell me what you think. I know he's a running back, okay? But they keep putting this franchise tag on this gentleman. To me, he's the best running back in the league. He's one of the best ever. He's very versatile. He's getting this $14 million franchise tag. And then you turn around and you look, and I know Kirk Cousins is a quarterback, but I don't care. You're giving this man $28 million a year, $84 million every penny guaranteed. That right there is a slap in the face.
Right.
So it's not always about your position that you play. It's about just doing the right things. How can you keep putting the franchise tag on Le'Veon? He's went over and beyond. Kirk Cousins has never been on the level that Le'Veon Bell has been on. And then you're going to keep giving him a one-year franchise tag. That's ridiculous. So I'm with you when you talk about the Players Association. I agree with you.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
Look at the scenario with my alma mater, where you know we had the unfortunate situation where the player gets hurt and he's in serious condition.
Oh yeah.
Had to have surgery over at Vanderbilt. So think about that. Not being a pro player, how much is going to happen here? Does PSU have to foot the bill, or is he going to be in a bad financial situation once he recovers? Hopefully, if he does recover, how does that work out? Does he end up in a situation where the family is really in financial ruin now? So that's the thing you also have to think about on the collegiate level, right?
And you know what? Now, here's what I think is going to happen. I'm thinking – Vanderbilt University, and let's get everybody caught up, and let's send our prayers out to the family of Christian Abercrombie, the linebacker for the Tennessee State University Tigers, who suffered a catastrophic head injury yesterday when the Tigers played Vanderbilt University down in Nashville. And he is currently in the hospital, has surgery, he's in intensive care, and it's going to be touch and go. I think in this situation, he's going to be okay because I see Vanderbilt University stepping in to take care of his medical bills. But I don't know what would be the case if Vandy was not there. Now, my daughter had an ACL when she was in college. Now, of course, that's not a catastrophic injury, but they wanted to come through my insurance that I had on her first. Before the university. I'm like, she's out there playing for you.
Right.
Yeah. I get the feeling he's going to be taken care of, but your point is well taken. What about these guys that's going out there on the collegiate level? And not only that, guys, my daughter's a good example of that. You injured me a couple of times. Even when your career is over, that's still something you got to deal with. Who pays for that? If you're a senior and you get injured in your last game, it's a lot to it, fellas.
I need to continue to be able to discuss it. It needs to continue to be a discussion about that. It needs to continue to be a discussion because that's sad. These guys, that's the roughest sport. I mean, you're playing football, you got to take care of these guys. And I don't understand the backwards thinking in the first place. Well, it starts with, and I'm going to say it, Roger Goodell needs to be gone. That's one of the problems.
Yeah.
So, he's holding the guys back. I mean, sincerely, he doesn't really care about it. We know whose side he's on. And he hasn't been pushing to make it better for these players. These guys play. What is your average NBA, your football career? It couldn't be any more than maybe 3 years, two, 3 years.
Three years.
Yeah. So, I mean, all that stuff factors in. So you can't ignore all this stuff. These guys have earned the right. They're making all these billions of dollars off these football players. And it's sad that not more is going on. There's no one's trying to help. Everyone talks the good game. But no one really stands up for it when the situation confronts itself. No one really has a voice. So we got to have all these guys out here need to speak up. All the players need to speak up. Doesn't matter what race you are. It's time for a change. These guys need to get their just due. And we need to make that happen, and it needs to happen now.
And think about, and we're talking about, we haven't even mentioned the political side of this. It was good to see Eric Reed, who was kneeling with Colin Kaepernick and kneeled all of last year, finally get signed by the, I believe it was the Atlanta Falcons signed Eric Reed.
Carolina Panthers
signed Eric Reed the other day. But, of course, Colin Kaepernick still has not been signed, and there's plenty of teams out there that could use a quarterback on his level. But once again, the way the owners are conducting this thing, they got it set up. Where a guy like Colin Kaepernick is whiteball, and where a guy like Earl Thomas, a proven NFL player, probably a Hall of Fame player, you know, he's had 8 years of excellence. He'll be a Hall of Fame player one day. Can't get paid. So, you know, it's a bad deal. But let's keep the family of Christian Abercrombie in our prayers and hope everything comes out well for him. But, hey, guys, we got a lot of other stuff going on today, and including, I don't know if you guys been watching, I'm sure you have, watching the Lakers and the Nuggets. What are your first impressions? I know it's exhibition preseason, Derek, but what are you seeing so far? Can you get anything out of what we're watching tonight?
Well, LeBron is already doing some team building because he wasn't going to play in the second quarter. They were down 13 points. He comes in the game with like 7 minutes left. So that right there is a positive. That's setting the team in a good direction. So if your leader's already, he's stepping up. As far as play, you know they're going to be kind of ragged. It's going to take another week or two before they actually get in the flow. So it's going to be hard to tell right now. You don't know. You still got guys trying to make the team. So you don't really know what the roles are. I'm looking at Josh Hart playing together with Lance Stephenson. So right now, you look at all the teams. It's just trying combinations right now. Teams are trying to see who fits with who. So you're not going to be able to tell a lot. But I can tell that LeBron's already doing the right thing just by being out there playing as long as he's played tonight.
Right. And you get and the situation is halftime right now, and they're up by 12, the Nuggets. And the Nuggets, of course, you know, have the players that they had a little cohesion already going. So, you know, you got guys playing well, got three guys in double figures. You got Jokic with 12, and then you got Murray with 16. And even Millsap, you know, was playing a little, 5 points, but he did some couple good moves out there. So they seem to have their stuff more together, whereas, you know, the Lakers got a whole conglomeration trying to come together, and it's going to take some time. And they got a few characters on the team, too, so you got to interweave that, too. So, but LeBron has proven that he can put a ragtag team together, and we'll see if it comes to fruition later on in the year.
Hey, Derek, what are your thoughts on Michael Beasley? Is he a guy that can help that team?
Michael Beasley reminds me of a lot of people. Some people will be familiar with his name, Walter Berry.
Yeah, on the offensive.
He's a hard guy to guard one on one. The only problem with Michael Beasley is he's a catch 22 because when he does get to rolling and he can score, but then when he does, he kind of becomes a black hole like Carmelo, the reputation Carmelo got of going one on one and not sharing the ball. He's never been known as a very good passer. He's a heck of a rebounder and he's a heck of a scorer. But if you get him in the right situation, I think he can do well. I would play him all in that second unit. I would go to him a lot. I think the Lakers are going to surprise some people. I think they're going to have a pretty good team once Ball comes back and everybody gets familiar with each other.
And you want to know what's funny, Ricky? Is that the
year
before, Beasley was like a dominant college player, right? And he was in the same conference with KD. So he does his thing that he goes to Miami. And it doesn't really work out. The next year, KD kind of duplicates what he does. So then when he comes out, it's like, okay, is this going to be another Beasley situation? And it's kind of skinny. You know, he's a skinny scorer. You know, we don't know what he's going to do. And then you had the big center from Ohio State. So it's like, what is Portland supposed to do? You know, I mean, you got a guy to have a seven-footer that can block shot, that can rebound and all that. How do you pass that up when you got a guy, like I said, that's a scorer, and he did the same thing that Beasley did the year before. So no one knew he'll be what he is now. And that's what I always try to give Portland the benefit of the doubt, even back in 84. Think about it. They had Clyde Drexler. Why do you need Jordan? Okay? Then you need a center, but Houston already took Olajuwon, so the second-best center was Bowie. So I think they've been caught up in a severe catch-22 where just bad luck and, once again, Murphy's Law struck them. And that's the thing about with the Portland picking the big man instead of Kevin Durant, because, once again, no one knew Kevin Durant was going to be what he is now, because it could have easily been beat.
I thought he's going to be pretty good now.
Me too.
You mean on the super duper star level? I'm assuming.
No, but what I'm saying, this is what I'm saying. Coming out of college, Beasley was doing what Durant was doing. They both were in the same conference, and they both were a player of the year, conference player of the year, and I think maybe even player of the year. I know KD might have been, but you know that's when the one and done was really kicking in. But Beasley was a dominant college player, but it just for some reason didn't work when he went to Miami. Whereas Durant goes to Seattle after not being picked first, I'm like, but I'm like, you cannot pass up a seven-footer, you know. And it's just unfortunate that this guy was injury prone. But I mean,
hey, Mike.
Yes,
Mike. Can I want to ask you a Ricky something, man? Because the show, I love this show, and sometimes we have to have laughter. What are the odds of having? And this is for the fans out there, the listeners as well. What are the odds of having Lance Stephenson, Michael Beasley, and JaVale McGee on the same team?
I know.
And Rondo. Let's not leave out Ray John Rondo.
Exactly. Yeah, I know. But think about it. Think about it. The Warriors won championship with Swaggy P and JaVale. Okay, now that, they were the clown show when they played for the Wizards. So now they're in a position where this guy was a Shaq and a Fool Hall of Famer. And, of course, his mother, one of the McGee twins, did not like that and thought that Shaq was really being super bad. But think about it. They actually have championships. You know, you got all these great players, Barkley, your brother, all of them without a ring. JaVale McGee has two rings, and Swaggy P has a ring. So, yeah, I mean, it happens. And that's why, once again, I always say you can't always judge things on rings because sometimes you're just in the right place at the right time. And Robert Ory has
so
seven rings, which is more than Michael. Yes.
I'm so with you on that. And people get caught up in that all the time. I mean, Will Perdue has 4 or 5 rings, the backup center for the for right. the Chicago Bulls doing Michael's. You gonna tell me he was a better player than Patrick Ewing? No, he was on a better team than Patrick Ewing.
Right.
And people get those things mixed up all the time. I think that's a great point. But you know what,
well,
man?
You know
I
what?
Got it.
Well, Ricky, let me just say this. Let me just say this, Ricky. Another one that a lot of people put a lot of credence in, and I think is not really as valid, is All-Star selection. That's a popularity contest.
Yeah.
So you can't say someone is a better player because they were in more All-Star games. That means they were a more popular player. Because let me give you an example. Michael retires, right? And do you know that the votes all went to B.J. Armstrong? B.J. Armstrong had the most votes at the guard position when Michael was out. So he ended up being a starter. A.C. Green was a starter when it was in Portland. Grant Hill had more votes than anybody in the NBA his rookie year. I'm like, what did he prove coming out of Duke to make him the number one vote getter? It was all popularity. And, of course, Dog and Jason had to play in the rookie game, whereas Grant's playing as a starter in the All-Star game. So this is kind of a precursor to him being in the Hall of Fame right now, is that this dude's been ultra popular from day one. And it just carried over to now. It's like, oh, you know what? I know he's injured and all that, but, you know, we should put him in the Hall of Fame. You know, come on, man.
Yeah.
So that's what
yeah.
I'm saying. You can't,
you're right. It's
popularity.
Those things are overlooked. But you know what, Derek? I got to give my props to JaVale McGee, because just like Mike said, when he went to Golden State, people thought he was a clown show, but he gave them some great minutes out there, and he fit into what they were doing perfectly. And obviously, he was no problem there whatsoever. So you got to give it up to him. Do you think he'll be able to bring some of that to L.A.?
I think so, because I like JaVale. I'm a JaVale fan. You know, his wife, I mean, his mom is from Flint. McGee sisters, I met them in college when I was a freshman, when they were at USC, and I was at University of Texas, San Antonio. So I'm a fan. The guy, he does his role well. For 20 minutes, I mean, he's up and down the floor. He's a shot blocker. He's a presence out on the floor. And the other team have to get back on defense, because he gets out on the break. I think he'll help the team a lot. I can see LeBron kind of similar to, not as effective, but similar to Chris Paul and DeAndre Jordan on the break.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And with Rondo also on the floor and Lonzo Ball, I think JaVale will be very instrumental, for sure.
Right. Right.
You know, I got to tell this quick story about JaVale's mother, Pam, who's a friend of Mike's in our show, theAfricanAmericanAthlete.com, which you can catch on Tuesdays. To our listeners out there, at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, Eastern Standard Time, and go to the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com Facebook page to get more information on that. But when I was working in Flint, we had a noontime basketball game. And Pam, we had them every Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays. And when Pam was, she played overseas because they didn't have the WNBA. Actually, she ended up being the second overall pick in 97. But before that, she come back from overseas, and she played with us, man. And, you know, Mike and Derek, okay, we know she's a great women's player. But we're like, okay, she's still a girl, though, right? So we're going to school her when she comes in here. Man, she used to come in there and take names, Derek. You hear me? And she had a mid-range jumper in a low post game, and just like her son, she was long as could be and had some sharp elbows, which I got a couple over time. But, man, I mean, she could play, man.
She was very physical. Her and the sister, they were very physical in high school.
Yeah.
I kept up with them a lot. They were like, they remind me of the two sisters now, the Wuma K sisters. That's what they remind me of. It's very rare that you have two sisters, a combination like that. If you think about it, those are the only two sister combos. I mean, you're talking about super combos. And those are the two families I can think of. So that's how high they were thought of. Even at USC, a lot of people don't know they played with Cheryl Miller and Cynthia Cooper.
Right.
Yep.
I mean, come on, that's a squad right there. That's one of the all-time best squads in history.
Exactly.
And Pam used to tell me about Cynthia. She said Cheryl was great, but she preferred Cynthia's game over Cheryl's. She said Cynthia could beat you all kind of ways, and no slight against Cheryl, but she was just a dominant, in your face, I'm just going to put 40 on you. But Pam always talked about how Cynthia could lock you down on the defensive end. She could distribute the basketball and all those things. So, yeah, those were great teams. And, you know, three or four of those girls off that team went on to play in the 84 Olympics. That were held in L.A. But, Mike, you covered the Agoumi Bay Sisters, didn't you?
Yeah. I know them really well. So I got the whole thing of Sinead's career, which is the younger sister. She's 2 years younger, and then I caught the junior and senior year of Mecca, and they nice young ladies from Houston, Nigerian background. So Nigeria, there's a huge Nigerian population in the Houston area too. So they They're Nigerian sisters. And matter of fact, Sinead has been over in Africa. I think she was in Nigeria, but she was in South Africa. She does stuff at ESPN. So, and then, of course, NECA was an MVP, and then she won a championship with Candace, and Candace got the finals MVP, but NECA was the season MVP. So, yeah, and of course, you know, covering Tara, you know, Tara really is fond of, you know, those two. But then she's had a lot of great players, like my homegirl, Sonya Henning, who she won her first championship with at point guard. You know, she really is fond of her. So there's a lot of great players that come out of there. But then again, they play for one of the greatest coaches ever, Tara. And it's a pleasure for me to cover someone like that. They got 1,000 wins. You know, of course, we had the Tennessee coach when I was living in Nashville, of course, you know, being a big-time coach. Then I met Gino Ariyama, too. So he's it's some pretty good stuff in women's basketball, and I get a lot of people that are like,
oh, no doubt.
I like it. I said, dude, when you can cover a legendary Hall of Fame coach like this and then see players like the Agoumi Bay Sisters, I you don't even have to ask me again. I enjoy it, and it's a pleasure. And I always tell them whenever I'm on Twitter with Sinead and what's going on, I said, look, it was a pleasure covering you, young ladies. I'm glad to see you doing well in life after college.
Yeah, no doubt about that, man. Women's basketball, the game is really and when you think about it, it was Pam and Cynthia Cooper and that USC team that really kind of started the trend of women's basketball in America. So props to them and I like JaVale going to the Lakers. But speaking of going, Derek, where is my man Jimmy Butler going to end up?
That's a good question because they're talking about his choices at first were the Knicks, the Nets, and the Clippers. And now he's kind of switched to Houston, Miami.
Yeah.
Or the
right.
So I see him. I think Houston could get him. But they would have to give up Eric Gordon, maybe P.J. Tucker. They would give up P.J. Tucker. You know, the money would work that way. But then they would also have to probably give up this – they got a guy named Zhao Cui. And they would have to give him up. He probably would be a decent player. And they also would have to give up a first draft pick. So, is that worth it for Jimmy Butler?
No.
And then there's no guarantee he's going to re-sign with you? So for a 1 year thing, I think it would be great. I could see them challenging the Warriors, but what about after this year? So that's going to be a difficult situation. So maybe he'll end up in Miami.
Well, I'll tell you what though, Derek, that would be an actual good replacement for losing Ariza, because think about what one of the key reasons they lost, besides Chris Paul getting hurt, was that shooting was atrocious. And Ariza was absolutely John Starks-like bad in the wrong time. So you get Butler to play both ends of the court, and he can score some buckets for you. And I think he'll try to go to the hole and score, whereas the reason was for some reason still out here shooting jumpers even though he was off. So that would be a great replacement for the loss of Ariza, because that's why some people think you should take a step back by making sure they gave Chris Paul all that money to let Ariza slip through the door.
Yeah, man, that
they're
gonna be interesting. Yes, go ahead, Derek.
I gotta ask you: do you give up from what you see? Do you give up Eric Gordon? Because I like Eric Gordon.
No.
I think he fits well.
Yeah, it's
a hard situation because, like, right now, you could start Jimmy Butler. Right now, you could start Gordon, or you could bring him off the bench. The key is how much they value Eric Gordon, because he also could stress the defense. He can go off the dribble. But, I mean, if I could get Jimmy Butler without giving up Eric Gordon, it's a done deal. So it's just something they have to think about. But at the end of the day, Jimmy Butler is an all-star. And if you can get him, I think that's something that you must go after. I don't think you pass that up.
Well, especially if you're trying to beat the Warriors.
Now, Derek, Jimmy Butler is an all-star, but is he a franchise guy?
Not to me, no. But he doesn't have to be.
Yeah, exactly, because you already got Harden there, so you don't need a franchise guy. That'll convolute things if you try to bring in a franchise guy that wants to be the franchise player when they already have that. He's going to be third fiddle. So can Jimmy adjust to that? I think he should be able to, because he's never really been – I mean, he might have been a star player on the Bulls, but, you know, he still hasn't been that elite franchise player that, you know, commands the money and all that, and commands all the ball and that kind of stuff.
But see, that's what I'm saying, guy. I totally agree with you. And he is an outstanding player, but he's not a guy you build a team around. But I think I think that's what he thinks of his game.
He does.
In a way, it's nothing wrong with that. Because you should think, hey, I can play with anybody. But if you can't get along with the guy that is really the top dog on the team, I think it's going to be a problem, right?
It is a problem, Rick. I'm going to tell you why it's a problem. And I don't care how good a player Jimmy Butler is. He was in Chicago, right, with Dwayne Wade. He complained there about the young guys.
Yep.
Now you go to Minnesota. Now you're throwing Carl Anthony Towns and Wiggins on the bus. So, I mean, who wants that headache? I like Jimmy Butler as a player, but as soon as he gets unhappy, then what happens? What does he bring to the table after that? You don't want the cancer in the locker room. You got these young guys that Houston has brought in. You don't want the negativity in the locker room. So it's a big gamble. You have to weigh all the options. And after they weigh all the options, they have to really decide, is that a decision they're willing to make? If you got Carmelo, you still have to deal with. Don't forget that as well.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
I mean, how much stuff do you want to bring? You trying to have the same problems that Luke Walton has, a tough job. And D'Antoni's trying to set himself up for the same situation. So you got to weigh all the options. At the end of the day, make what's the best option for the team, not what's the best option for that individual player.
Well, Derek, tell us, and let me get everybody caught up. You're listening to Derek Gervin's As Good As It Gets Basketball Podcast with Derek Gervin, star of the show, and Ricky Hampton and Michael Robinson of the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com. Hey, Derek, I was going to ask you, we always hear about this locker room stuff. What is it that can occur in a locker room that's going to impact the way you play? Because lots of people work with people they don't know, but they still go out and do their job.
Okay. I'm going to go to a football term. I'm going to use Pittsburgh Steelers for a second. You got Le'Veon Bell situation. Some of the players came out and they spoke up against Le'Veon Bell. So you have a fractured locker room. Because there's a lot of guys that stand up for Le'Veon Bell. So now you got to deal with this on the floor, on the field. Are guys going to do what they're supposed to do as hard as they can? And then if you look at a basketball court, am I going to set the screens as hard as I'm supposed to?
Right.
Am I going to pass you the ball when I'm supposed to at the exact moment? All those things factor in because people are funny. I mean, we deal with the human nature. And a lot of times people get outside of themselves and they forget about the team game and the feelings get involved. People get caught up in their feelings. And that's in sports as well. So you got to deal with all those kind of factors.
Right. And another one for basketball, think about with Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade, where he liked a picture of Gabrielle Union and kind of made it lustfully. So, you know, and people might, like, wink at that, but that could really cause some problems, like Derek was saying. Then look at D'Angelo
Russell.
The one that was on
Russell.
The Lakers. Swaggy P.
Russell.
Yeah, right. Look how that just totally destroyed the Lakers. You know, and then D'Angelo gets shipped out of there. Swaggy was never the same. Then he loses his girl. They're not even together anymore. So
Jimmy Jackson.
Kind of stuff,
Jamal Mashburn. Jason Kidd, Jimmy Jackson.
Yep. Yeah, that team should have been a lot better.
Wait a minute. Let's go back to that. Jimmy Jackson,
Jason Kidd,
and
Jamal
Mashburn. Dallas.
Right, yeah.
Jamal, and how did they end up splitting up?
Let me get to this because this is right in my mix.
So, and this would get to the whole Hall of Fame garbage that really irks me. So, like I said, Dog goes to the Bucks. The Bucks improved by 14 games. They barely missed the playoffs because they lost a game that last weekend. Boston went instead in the 8th seed. Detroit nowhere near the playoffs with Grant Hill, and then Dallas. He goes there and joins Mashburn and Jimmy Jackson. So that team should have been okay, but they won more games, but they were horrible. And then all of a sudden, Tony Braxton supposedly was the principal person, and somebody was trying to hit on her, and somebody else got jealous. It was some kind of just convoluted mess, and it pretty much fractured that team. And then they end up splitting them up. Jason Kidd ends up getting traded, to Phoenix for, of all people, with Michael Finley and Steve Nash. And then he ends up getting traded in New Jersey later for point guard. Marbury. So Marbury and Sam Cassell and all those guys, they trade places in New Jersey, and then Jason goes there later and ends up going to two championships and all that. But during that time, like I said, that Dallas team should have been a lot better with those three-headed monsters. But for some reason, like they think it was all the Tony Braxton situation, it destroyed that Dallas team. And then, of course, a lot of people don't realize what happened in Detroit is that they had back-to-back picks, and there's a little sneaky move by Detroit, but I think it backfired on them. They had back-to-back picks, and they picked Lindsey Hunter in front of Allen Houston. And you might say, well, what difference does that make? Allen Houston was the leading scorer in Tennessee history, one of the best players in the SEC, you know, bigger program, where Lindsey comes from Jackson State. So if you get Jackson State player ahead of the Tennessee player, you say, hey, look, this guy went to a small black college. We don't have to pay him that much. And then, hey, but we picked him ahead of you, so we really don't have to pay you anything. And just check that out about how it was in Detroit when Allen Houston ended up going to New York later. I think a lot of that had to do with that because a lot of people didn't catch that. But I said, yo, why would they pick Lindsey ahead of Allen Houston? But they had back-to-back picks so they could play those games. So that's what happened in Detroit. And then, of course, Grant comes along and doesn't make that team any better. But for some reason, he's supposedly a great teammate. And then, of course,
Dog. He made it better. He did make it better when he got traded for Ben.
Exactly. So I get all these cats. I'm like, man, what are you talking about? Grant Hill was a Hall of Famer, man. Those first few years, I'm like, dude, how good was it? You guys know how good Detroit was. No, it don't matter. You know, his stats is Grant averaged 22 points a game for a rookie year.
He was 22 points a game, and his team was better. Why wasn't he rookie of the year? Oh, well, I don't know. I said, Ben, his career average is 21-6-3. Grant Hill is 17-6-4. Which one is better? You know? And he has a chance.
He was about, and all of that, though, got availability. I mean, Derek, you want teammates who are going to be able to play, right?
I'm glad to get to that situation right now. And it's not switching the subject. It's still talking about availability. I had to bring this team up. My favorite player is back, Mike Rick, in Toronto. Availability. He looks like he's healthy. So I had to ask this tonight. Kawhi.
Kawhi.
Oh, yeah.
He looks healthy because I wanted to ask people tonight, and I really wanted to know what you guys would chime in. I'm looking at Toronto. I think Toronto, look at their squad right now as they get in the flow. I think they're a team that could challenge in the Eastern Conference. And so I'm going to ask about Toronto. What do you guys think about their chances? And then I'm going to ask you about as well in the Western Conference. There's a team that's not been talked about all year, and they've been totally ignored. And it bothers me because they're right here in my city. What do you guys think about Toronto's chances of coming out of the West? I mean, out of the East? And will the Spurs be able to compete at all in the West?
My whole thing with Toronto is what are you going to do when you get in the playoff? You don't have 23 to deal with anymore, so that's going to help you right there. And in my mind, you got a better player in Kawhi than DeRozan. I don't even think that's close. If he's healthy, he's going to be there the whole year. He's a much better player. But I think they will be a force to be reckoned with. I think everybody's kind of conceding it's going to be Philly and Boston, like back in the day. And San Antonio, they're always going to be dangerous, man, the way Pop is able to establish, himself and get those teams going. But the West has just got so many dogs out there now, including the back-to-back champions. So that's my take on that. I don't know how Mike will take it.
Well, yeah. Well, for me, see, and it's funny because I have said that last year when the year was kind of winding down, I said, look, people – laugh at Toronto because they got swept by Cleveland. I said, but sometimes a team or a player has your number. But they were the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. So, and like we said, if you got addition by subtraction, well, you get rid of DeRozan, who was their best player, but you get this guy that does it on both ends and it could be a dominant player, you know, and as long as Ibaka and everybody else playing up to their standards, they could be there. And we don't know if the point guard coming back and also Hayward coming back, we don't know if that's going to make this team better or now with those players that elevated their games, will they now kind of get lackadaisical because, like, oh, man, all we're going to do now is watch Kyrie come out here and do his Uncle Drew stuff and, you know, and then they want Hayward to be the star. So some of those players might take a step back. So we don't know how good Boston's going to be and how their cohesion is going to be. Then, of course, Philly, maybe that was a phenomenal moment because, remember, they won, like, what, 18, 17? Mm-hmm. They had a long winning streak. And remember, they only edged the Cavaliers by that one game for the four seed. And then what happened when they got in the playoffs? They kind of fizzled out. So we don't know how good they really are. And, you know, and like I said, unless – your boy comes back with a jumper where he can actually be a threat out there. But so that's what I'm saying. So those two teams are really, you don't really know. But we know Toronto was the number one seed, and they got a player that's better. So unless they really digress dramatically, they can only improve by getting Kawhi, a healthy Kawhi. And as for the Spurs, you know, they're always, you know, a threat. But then let's not forget, Tony Parker's gone, which is a lot of experience that, you know, we might take for granted because he was injured a lot. But, you know, that's going to change things. And then, of course, you know, no Ginobili. So we don't know how this new league team is and how will LaMarcus play now as the head and shoulders, you know, man on the team now. And, you know, will he do like he did in Portland, or will he do like he first did in San Antonio? So that's still – San Antonio is kind of hard to gauge.
Hey, guys, I'm looking at this thing that they're taping up. LeBron is iced on the sidelines, but I'm looking at this thing. LeBron James, nodal filmography, actor, train wreck, small foot, executive producer, best shot, shot, shove and dribble, student athlete. I mean, clearly, Derek, he went there for more than just basketball.
That guy's going to be a billionaire. He had a plan way before this year. He thinks ahead. Him and Rich Paul, those guys seem to be very intelligent. They have a vision. And I see them look 5 years ahead, it seems like. And then LeBron's been planning for this move for quite a while. So he already knew he was going to be leaving Cleveland. The movies look like that's what's going to be happening. It's going to be similar to Kobe with the movies added in. Kobe's become like a philanthropist, man. When I see the new Kobe Bryant, I'm like, man, I guess the guy he's very – well, you look at him now, he speaks about five languages. He speaks five languages. I see LeBron doing the same thing. I mean, L.A. is made for him. He's going to take over L.A. There's nothing wrong with it. He's earned it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and I take this back to our initial conversation here on the Derek Gervin's As Good As It Gets basketball podcast. The NFL guys, in comparison, guys, the NFL guys are just scrapping, trying to get out of the league, you know, with the health and a decent pension. I mean, obviously these guys are making good money, but it just pales in comparison to what these guys in the National Basketball Association are doing. And, again, that is all on the NFLPA, and if they don't get stronger, it's going to continue to happen. But I do want to go back to the question you asked regarding the Spurs and the Raptors, Derek. You got Mike and I's opinion. What are your thoughts on these two teams?
The only reason I mentioned the Spurs is because if you look at their roster, they can go 12 deep.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times when teams go under the radar, that's a good thing. Because one thing about the Spurs, you know, they're going to play hard every night. That's demanded by Greg Popovich. So I see them, I actually was thinking about Oklahoma City. You know it's going to be Golden State. I believe Houston to be right there with Golden State. And then the question is, will it be the Spurs, Lakers, or Oklahoma City? I see the Spurs, and I can't leave Utah out. I have to put them in there as well. But I see the Spurs possibly they're going to be better than last year. I mean, Mitchell's going to be a year better. Gobert's going to be better. They're wiser. They're a good team, and they finished well. I always look at how a team finishes as for the what leads to the next year, the following year. I think Utah can only go up. And they're going to be a tough out for anybody. I don't care what team it is. So you got five teams. Go ahead.
Every time somebody mentions Donovan Mitchell, I'm thinking he should be here in Detroit. Can you imagine with Drummond and the guy we got from the Clippers? I can't even think of his name now. The forward we got from the Clippers.
So you like that guy's game. You like his game for the Pistons.
Donovan Mitchell?
Yes.
The kid we got from Duke, Kennard, he's going to be a nice player.
Luke Kennard, liked him
player.
From the beginning. Yes.
But, man, nothing like this guy. And, boy, go ahead.
Why don't you? So, if you like Donovan Mitchell that well, did you have Utah anywhere? Why? I have to ask you two guys before we get off this air. Why does everyone think Golden State is invincible? In my mind, I still think they could have. We'll never know. But I really think last year that everyone got a little closer. Everyone got closer to them.
I'm gonna let Mike answer for both of us, cause Mike.
Yeah,
Mike has been singing
Derek,
this song the last
I've
3 years,
been,
and you're absolutely right,
yeah.
Mike. Go ahead.
I've been saying, all, you think about it, all 4 of these years, you know, they talk about, oh, they should have 4 straight. And I said, yeah, but you know what? Think about it. The first one, they were on the verge of possibly losing that because the Cavs actually should have been up 3-0. LeBron should have hit the game winner, which would have meant that Kyrie wouldn't have got hurt in overtime, you know, but it was meant to be up there, apparently. Then they're still up 2-1 with only him. But then, you know, once they did the Iguodala switch, it seemed to change the whole mood. But then the next year, they should have been knocked off by Oklahoma City. And then they survived that somehow. And then they come there and they lose to in the finals to the Cavs. Then the next year, like I said, you know, they had the San Antonio situation where Kawhi gets hurt. So it's like, and they were getting blown out that first game. So it's like they had every possible good luck fortune happen for them. And when they did lose, they were trying to say everybody cheated, and that's what's really discouraging. Like, dude, you guys got every lucky break, and then you go ahead and sign a top notch player at a bargain basement price, and you do it again this year with DeMarcus. But then you guys still complain when you lose, and then this last year you're on the verge of losing again, and then Chris Paul gets hurt. So it's like I've never considered them like a real juggernaut. I just thought they had fortunate timing. Things worked out, but I never thought they could compete with the Bulls, you know, the 72 win. And I was there. I covered that team, and I was there when they won the 70th game. And I know this team couldn't mess with them. I know that. So I've never really been sold on them. I always think that the Warriors are susceptible to losing, but they seem to get that lucky break whenever they need it. So –
But Derek, they are back to back champs. I mean,
mm-hmm.
That's we're recording. What are your thoughts on it?
I think they're a very good team. But if you look at it, like you said, they could be 2-2 really easily. I just don't think. I think it's been blown out of proportion. I hear this about the greatest team ever.
I definitely
agree with that. I mean, I'm older, so I've seen. I've seen the Lakers, the Celtics, the Knicks.
Right.
So I've seen all these teams, and I know Golden State and the Bulls. There's no way when I put these guys, and I don't care what era it's in.
Right.
These guys, I will give them their respect, but I know when they're talking about a physical era, even you go like to the Knicks with the Derek Harper, Greg Anthony
right.
era, those teams
right.
get up in you. And what these
yeah.
guys, if they've not had anyone, like, hitting them when they come off screens, Oakley stepping in to Steph Curry when he comes off these screens. Steph gets a lot of room to run around now. And
mm-hmm.
that's what the NBA, that's what they wanted. They wanted the freedom. Same with the NFL, with all the passing and all that. You know, you can barely touch
right.
the quarterback. It's flag
yep.
football. In the NBA, they want a lot of shots up. This year, I can tell you guys now, and I'm going to guarantee it, this year, the NBA will break the 3-point attempt record, without a doubt, and it will shatter the record. You got teams now that were taking 30 threes. They're taking 45, 46 threes a game. So we watching the game continue to evolve, and I'm guaranteeing right here tonight that they will shatter the 3-point attempt record, without a doubt.
I think you're right. Yeah. I think that's where the game has gone, and fortunately for the Warriors, they got guys that fit that scheme. They got some extraordinary shooters. And because of the way they play, I think that makes people look at them in such awe, the way Clay
mm-hmm.
and Steph shoot the ball long range. That definitely plays into it. But, guys, we only got a couple of more minutes left, man. This has been a quick hour. Actually, we've gone a little longer, but hey, that's okay too, man, because it's a great conversation. Derek, what are some of the what other shows do you have in the hopper?
Well,
anything
tomorrow,
you can share with the audience?
Yes, I'm glad you asked. Actually, tomorrow, October the 1st, is my day to call in and pencil in the date for Dick Vitale. So I'm trying to get – that's a big show. I'm very excited for that
absolutely.
One. Especially for the young – yeah, we got all the college people, the young people, that are, the Duke fans and all of that. And then coming up October the 25th, already confirmed, Julius Dr. J. Irvin. And I'm really excited about that. I know he's a big fan, that you're a big fan, Ricky. So that'll be an interesting night. October 25th, 9:30 p.m., Central Savings Time. Julius Dr. J. Irvin. And I can't wait. I really can't wait.
Well, guys, hey, a lot of fun. Some big dates coming up, fellas. Looking forward to doing it. And be sure to check out the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com talk show on Tuesdays, 10 p.m. Go to the African American Athlete Facebook page to get more information on the Derek Gervin As Good As It Gets podcast and the African American Athlete podcast. Well, brothers, it's been a great evening. And once again, Rick, prayers out to the family of Christian Amber Convery of the Tennessee State Tigers. Let's hope this young man pulls through and has a full recovery. But Mike and Derek, I'm sorry.
I have to say this first. I want to send my condolences. I hope things go well with the young man. But it's like I can never leave the gym on a missed shot. So I cannot leave off staying Central Savings Time, Central Standard Time. And I apologize.
That's all right.
I wouldn't have been able to sleep tonight if I didn't clear that up. So I don't leave the gym off a miss.
I got you.
Hey, that's right. That's right. Hey, I don't need the practice tee without hitting it straight down the middle on the golf course. I know exactly what you mean, man. But until next time, for Ricky Hampton, Michael Robinson, and the one and only Derek Gervin, we'll talk to you later. Good night, and God bless.
Have a good night, Mike, Ricky.
You too.
All right.
Thank you.